All right, everybody, welcome back to episode 2 of The Berg Show. I'm Sean Conboy, and I'm here with my good buddy, Mike P. And P, I mean, how right could you be?
Yeah, things are going pretty much exactly as we expected. So, yeah, it looks like Penn's wins in the finals. Gary Bettman's throwing a little celebration this weekend.
It's really amazing because pretty much everything we talked about in the first podcast has come true. The Penguins' third and fourth lines are chipping in and really contributing, and Malkin stepped it up. Sidney Crosby's been unbelievable. And basically our thesis statement was that Carolina did not have a line other than the Staal line that could cover the Penguins' superstars, and that's pretty much been the deal-breaker in this series so far, I think. Cam Ward's been overwhelmed, and basically, you know, to start out the series, you had the Staal on Staal lines, but now when the Canes tried to switch it up in Game 3, really that didn't work out for them either because they had the Staal line on Crosby's line, and Malkin pretty much ran wild yet again.
Yeah, you can't say enough about Malkin. You hear it everywhere. That's what everyone's talking about. Malkin is a unbelievable player. He's probably not going to win the MVP, but maybe he has a chance at the Conn Smythe. So,
well, I think the difference is now that he's chipping in at both ends of the ice as well. He seems to be back-checking a lot more, and he's pushed it into overdrive in the postseason. I thought in the regular season he was a little bit lazy with back-checking, but really against Carolina, ever since the Capitals series, he's doing the job in his own end as well, and basically creating so many odd-man rushes up the ice for the Penguins.
Yeah, everyone's really chipping into. Kunitz had that, finally got on the board. He has a ton of assists. Bill Guerin's just playing great. Everyone's playing great. There's not one player you can specifically say they're kind of dogging it. I mean, every forward is playing great to me. And defensively, we've been very solid. Carolina really can't get anything going. I mean, the only game that was even really close was the first game, and it was kind of artificially close. It only got close in the last 3 minutes. So I just think that a team like Carolina, they just don't have enough skill. Like,
no. I don't think so. I mean, if you look at the postseason scoring leaders, Carolina has one player in the top 10, Eric Staal, with 14 points, but their next closest player is all the way down at 25, Jussi Jokinen. And Jokinen only has 4 assists and 7 goals. 11 points total, and he's a minus one. And this is a guy who was cut by Tampa Bay at the beginning of the season. And like you said, they just don't have the skill. I think they're an extremely well-coached team and very disciplined. And they don't give up. Just like we predicted in the first podcast, but really the skill for the Penguins has pretty much overwhelmed them.
If you look at just the way that the players reacted after that Game 3, I mean, they knew it. They know the series is over. They just know they're not as good a team as this and as the Penguins. I mean, you can't compete with two guys like Crosby and Malkin when they're playing their absolute best. I think this is the best hockey I've ever seen out of Malkin, ever. And I think, yeah, it was Gleason that said he's not God, but he's pretty much the closest thing, right?
If you looked at Joe Corvo's face in the interview in Game 3 before the third period, it sure seemed like Joe Corvo thought he was playing against God because he was completely frustrated, you know, and just exhausted. It just seemed like they were completely cooked at that point. And I think, you know, it's been such a long playoffs, though, for Carolina. And yeah. It's been such a grind for them playing 2 7-game series to start off the playoffs against New Jersey and Boston, and really physical series as well. That Boston series got incredibly physical towards the end. That was a really hard hitting series, and you know, you brought up Kunitz and Guerin and their contribution, and I made that point a long time ago actually in a blog post on Pulling No Punches before the playoffs started. And I just thought that the trade-off from this year to last year, acquiring Chris Kunitz and Bill Guerin, would actually be better for the Penguins come playoff time than having Marian Hossa on the team. I thought that both players were more impact playoff performers than Hossa. And really, that's really come true. You could say playing on a line with Sidney Crosby would contribute to that, but I think both have played very solid all-around games as well. Chris Kunitz is actually, I believe, sixth
in assists,
and he's done a great job being a playmaker, even though he's had a pretty hard time finding the net so far in the postseason. He's contributing in other ways. And Marian Hossa, what can you say about him? I mean, he's pretty much fallen flat for the Wings.
I think the play that pretty much summed up Kunitz best for me, I don't know if it was game one or game two, but someone in Carolina took a cheap shot on Sid and kind of threw him into the net after the whistle. And the first guy to get in that guy's face was Chris Kunitz. I mean, he's not the biggest guy, and he's definitely not the strongest guy, but he's always making plays, and more importantly, he's always defending his teammates, and especially Sidney Crosby, because you need a guy that's going to come in there, no questions asked every time, and get in a guy's face. Because, I mean, yeah, when you're playing with Hossa and Dupuis, you have two speedy guys with some skill, but do you have anyone that's really going to defend Sidney Crosby? I don't think a lot of people describe Marian Hossa as a great player, but Chris Kunitz definitely, unequivocally, is a great player. So
Kunitz and Hossa are actually tied with 12 points each in the playoffs. But let's take a look at this stat line. Plus minus. Chris Kunitz, plus 5. Marian Hossa, plus 4. Bill Guerin, plus 10 so far in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's on and off the ice. Bill Guerin adds so much to the Penguins. It's unbelievable. I'm not questioning Sidney Crosby's leadership. I think he's a great leader, but I think he's a quiet leader. And I think, yeah, I mean, you get that from interviews. You just get that from people all around the league saying, yeah, he doesn't really talk that much, but he's the hardest guy. He practices the hardest out of anyone. And I think having a guy like Bill Guerin that maybe is more of a vocal leader to maybe match Brooks Orpik, who I think, and you were saying, is another vocal leader in the locker room. I think that adds a lot, especially come playoff time. And if you looked at Bill Guerin's reaction after he scored the 6th goal in Game 3, I just thought that was awesome.
Very similar to Crosby's reaction against the Capitals in Game 7. Pretty stoic, and it seems like he's very focused on closing this series out. Not much celebration for Guerin.
I just think it says, here we are, and we're going to beat you. We're a better team than you. And that's the kind of attitude we need. That's the kind of attitude Detroit has. That's a champion attitude. And that's exactly what we need. I think last year, once we got to the finals, I think it was everyone was just so jubilant, so excited. It's kind of easy to get caught up in that. This year, I mean, there's no way they're going to settle for anything but the cup.
Sure.
Period.
Sure. And let's talk about Game 3 for a minute. I was a little bit worried going back to Carolina that the Penguins wouldn't be as intense, and I thought Carolina might steal Game 3 away from us. And after they got the first goal of the game, and the crowd was really unbelievable, I thought the crowd was fantastic in Carolina. I thought, okay, here we go. I think this one might slip away from the Pens, and Carolina might make a series out of this. But the way the Pens responded was fantastic. Sidney Crosby has been incredible, and not just his goal scoring, not just the assist, but in the corners,
yeah,
playing keep away from defense. No one can get the puck off of him. It's pretty unbelievable. He just glides around the corners, buys time for his wingers to get in front of the net and to get into open positions. He's been completely determined with the puck. He might be the best player on the puck in the league right now. I think he could win a keep away contest with anyone, and if he's number two, then Evgeny Malkin would be number one.
Yeah. And here's something I was thinking about. Has anyone else noticed that with Bylsma, we're scoring so many more last-minute goals? I don't think we've ever had this many goals in the last minute of a period, or
sure,
any period. I mean, take Game 3, we had 2 in the last minute. I just think we skate hard all the time.
Game 2, there was pretty much the turning point in the game was Chris Kunitz's goal with 7 seconds left to take the lead for the Penguins.
I think when the Pens see any kind of weakness in another team, if the team's saying, "Oh, period's almost over, I'm gonna kind of meander around," Pens just pounce on that, and that's what you do when you're a great team. If your opponent is showing weakness, you strike, and the Penguins just seem to always either have a counterpunch or an attack ready for any team, any time, and that's great. And I think that definitely comes from coaching. And I think Dan Bylsma, as much as people want to say, oh, Gonchar came back, you know, there was a lot of different reasons. I think Dan Bylsma was a huge, huge reason. His stoic demeanor, and I just think the players respect him a lot. Former player.
He seems like a locker room first kind of guy.
Yeah.
Much like Mike Tomlin is in the way that he handles the media. He sort of jokes around with the media, and, you know, it's not like he's not really antagonistic. I don't think you know, the media doesn't dislike him, but I get the feeling that when he's asked certain questions, for instance, let's say about Alexander Ovechkin's hit on Sergei Gonchar in the Capitals series, he didn't comment on it because he knew, I think, that as part of the playoffs, you're going to have dirty hits. And down along the line, the Penguins may dish out a dirty hit someday. And I think he was very smart in that, because when the Cook hit happened on Cole in the Carolina series, he was asked about it again, and he pretty much said, hey guys, you know, the first time I talked to you, I said, I'm going to let the refs deal with that. He didn't comment on it, even though Boudreau was crying about it to the media. He didn't comment on it, and I think that maybe was a smart move. I just think that he has the mentality that whatever happens out on the ice, we'll talk about it in the locker room, but I'm not going to talk to reporters about it. And I think players really, really respect that.
Yeah, definitely. He's great with the media, and he's great with the media in a way where I've never heard him call out a player. And maybe that's because we've had so much success, there hasn't really been anything to really comment upon, but I just think he's a player's type of coach, and he makes all the right decisions. And I think the best decision he's made thus far is the 7 D-men and the 11 forwards, basically sacrificing the one forward for an extra D-man. I think that's taken the Penguins team to another level, because you're getting Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin on the ice more. They're logging more ice time, but it's not an inordinate amount of time. Ryan mm-hmm. Getzlaf was getting over 24 minutes, mm-hmm. sometimes over like 27 minutes mm-hmm. in a game. I mean, Malkin and Crosby are still only getting 21, 22 minutes, and they're 21 and 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's perfectly fine. I think it makes our fourth line super dangerous,
mm-hmm.
and it keeps our D fresh. Only one D-man logged over 20 minutes in Game 2.
Yeah, that component of having world-class playmakers out there with the fourth line, I think, has really been helpful for the Penguins and makes every single one of our lines so dangerous, because Miroslav Chatan really isn't your typical fourth-line player, and to have him out there with Sidney Crosby, who can dish him the puck, or Evgeny Malkin, I think has been really helpful, and Craig Adams has seemed to have really thrived playing on the wing as well.
Yeah, he adds a lot of all those kind of grit things you need in a fourth-line player, but I mean, I'm not going to say he has a penchant for scoring, but he has 2 goals, and he's helping out in a lot of ways, the face-off dot, checking hard, penalty killing, all those things. So I think he's a great addition to the team. He was a great waiver wire pickup.
I think the 7 D-men really is what's allowing us to utilize Gonchar as well, because he still seems like his knee isn't 100%. And I think that the 7 D-men allow us to utilize him, which has been really important to have him on the power play. And also to keep playing Boucher as well, who I think has added a lot to the team. He's a playoff veteran and certainly can be dangerous on the second power play unit as well.
And my favorite thing that Boucher added was at the end of Game 3 when he went after Beta.
Yeah, that retribution for the cross-check to the face on Chris Letang, I thought was said a lot about Boucher's character, and it says a lot about the leadership of Bylsma and Crosby and the strength of the locker room. I talked in a blog post about Miroslav Chatan and his ability to stand up for Chris Letang and drop the gloves. And he's a guy who had only been in 2 or 3 fights in his NHL career before. But I think he knows that, you know, it's playoff time, and so does Boucher. And the willingness of those guys to drop the gloves and to get physical and stand up for their teammates is really an intangible that you need to have to win a Stanley Cup, I think. The Pens had it in 91-92 with guys like Jay Caulfield. And it's good because these guys are stepping in for a guy like Eric Goddard, who really has no business playing in the playoffs. But, I don't think you need guys like that. As long as your skilled players are willing to stand up for their teammates, I don't think the Penguins have suffered at all with Goddard out of the lineup, and they're certainly not getting picked on by other teams. So, Pete, do you want to go to some reader email? I asked the readers in a blog posting about a week ago to send in their thoughts, and they could get on the podcast, and we got some pretty decent emails, so why don't we check those out right now? Want to handle the first one?
Okay, yeah. Hey, guys. Love the first podcast. Con, I noticed that Joe Starkey had a column in Sunday's paper titled, Pens Are Better This Year. I thought it was hilarious that you wrote the exact same column before the playoffs even started, from Z-Man.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if Joe Starkey's a pulling no punches fan or not, but yeah, the column was quite similar, and I mean, I think it's pretty obvious to everyone in Pittsburgh right now that the Pens are better equipped this year to win the Cup than they were last year. And for me, as I said before the playoffs started, it's Starkey mentioned the fact that basically our stars are another year older and they've had the playoff experience, and certainly that's a good point. But for me, it really comes down to the presence in front of the net and the mental and physical toughness of the team this year. Really, the trade-off of Ryan Malone and Marian Hossa for Kunitz and Guerin, to me, makes us a much better team this year. And plus the emergence of guys like Chris Letang, who last season really was, he was a non-factor in the playoffs, but this season is contributing big-time goals in the playoffs and is an unbelievable puck mover on our breakouts. I think those three players have really pushed us over the edge. But, you know, last season, a lot of people were sad to see Ryan Malone go. To be honest with you, I didn't think he was as big of a factor as people thought. Really, his presence in front of the net was decent, but the things that Bill Guerin is doing in front of the net right now, basically he has the ability to score on wrist shots, he has the ability to make plays as an assist man that Malone never had, and also can stand in front of the net and screen the goalie. Ryan Malone was pretty one-dimensional in that respect. He pretty much just was a goalie screener and not much else for my money, and I thought he was also largely pretty irresponsible in the defensive end as well. So yeah, I did read the column, and I do respect Joe Starkey, but, you know, I think it would have been a much better column if he would have wrote it a couple weeks ago. I think to write that at this point, I think it's pretty apparent that the Pens are better this season. I mean, what do you think, Pete?
Yeah, they're going to the Cup Finals. We have the 1-2 guys in scoring. It's a no-brainer, really. All right, you ready to go to the next question?
Sure, and this one's about the Penguins' probable competition in the Stanley Cup Finals, a team who might be a little bit worse than last season. Mm-hmm. But reader Adam C. doesn't seem to think so. P. Hossa is better than Datsyuk? Really? Datsyuk is up for the Hart this season for a reason. He's arguably the most complete center in the league, playing for the defending Stanley Cup champs. He finished fourth in scoring during the regular season, behind Malkin, Ayo, and Sid. Hossa finished with only 71 points, 26 behind Datsyuk. Now, I agree that Hossa is an elite winger, probably one of the top 5 or 10 in the world, but to say he is better than Datsyuk is completely ridiculous.
Well, I stand by what I said for a multitude of reasons, and the first is, well, Hossa was the leading goal scorer on the Red Wings, and I think
in the regular season,
and I think mainly that the Datsyuk hype has mostly been created by the media. I think he plays on a great team. I think he has a good skill set, but the last 2 years in the playoffs, where is he? He has as many points as Tom Pody. So he has one goal. I mean, if you have one goal in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you're not an elite center. You talk about Ovechkin, Sidney Crosby, and Malkin. They're the top three goal scorers in the playoffs. Datsyuk has 7 points. I mean, Hossa has 6 goals. So he scored more goals in one game than Datsyuk has all playoffs. And the best example I can give of Datsyuk's value to that team is he wasn't in game four, and I honestly didn't notice. They still dominate. There's so many good players on that team, up and down, Franz and Holmstrom, Hossa. But the reason I think Hossa's better is he scores more and he does more in the playoffs. I think he's a playoff performer, and I think that's the most important thing in hockey. If you're good in the playoffs, then that's where you make your paycheck. That's where you earn your status. And to say, yeah, he was the fourth leading scorer in the league, but I don't know. I think he's good defensively. I don't think he's great. I think Malkin had more takeaways, but he gets less credit, and I think that's all mostly generated by the media.
Well, Pia, I mean, I think this serves our point about the Red Wings. It serves our point about Datsyuk. The stats don't lie. The top four MVP candidates, Malkin, Crosby, Ovechkin, and Datsyuk. Malkin has 12 goals, 16 assists. Crosby, 14 goals, 12 assists. And the number three scorer in the playoffs, Ovechkin, 11 goals, 10 assists. Where's Datsyuk? 51 with one goal and how many assists? Six assists.
Franz and her Franzen and Zetterberg are 4 and 5 in points scoring. I think Hendrik Zetterberg is far and away a better player than Datsyuk. I think he's just as good on the back check, just as good on the forecheck, and he has more of a scoring touch. I just think when you have a marquee franchise in the NHL like the Red Wings, the media wants a star. They want a player that they can say, this guy's great. He's our best player. Well, I think Datsyuk's good, don't get me wrong, but if you replaced Malkin with Datsyuk, I think Detroit would be head and shoulders better and the Penguins would be a lot worse.
But if Detroit does abuse us in the finals, it will be because of one man.
Johan Franzen.
The big man, yeah. Johan Franzen. Absolutely, the mule. I mean, that's the guy that the Penguins will really have trouble against. They'll have trouble moving him from the front of the net, him and Holmstrom, just like last year's finals. And it's not going to be Datsyuk, and it's not going to be Zetterberg that's going to kill the Penguins. It's going to be Franzen and Holmstrom. If we can't move those guys from the front of the net, Fleury's going to have a long, long Stanley Cup finals.
Yeah, Franzen almost, he reminds me of Guerin in the sense where they both have great wrist shots. They both have great control of the puck, yeah. But Franzen's just a beast. He led the league in playoff scoring last year. He's fourth this year. What can you say about the guy? I think he's the best centerman on that team.
Speaking of Detroit, let's go to the next question. You want to handle this one?
Yeah, I'll read it. Guys, great job on predicting the playoffs so far, but in the first podcast, Sean talked about how Chicago might give the Wings a run for their money. The Wings have pretty much dominated. What happened? Ryan in New York City.
Well, Ryan, thanks for the question, and I will admit I was wrong about the Chicago series. I did think that Detroit would win in 6 games. At this point, it's looking like it's probably going to be 5 games, and the reason is pretty simple. Chicago thrives on their young stars. However, in this series, their young stars have barely been on the ice. Taves, Kane, and Sharp haven't logged very many minutes, and actually, they haven't been producing very well at all. Patrick Kane, Chicago's young right winger, is actually he's recorded 13 points so far, but he's a minus 10.
Wow.
In the and actually, P, maybe we should explain to the listeners who aren't very familiar with hockey about plus-minus. Plus-minus is basically an accumulation of the points that your line has scored and the points that are scored against your line when you're on the ice, not counting power plays.
Unless you score a shorty or a shorty gets scored against you.
Right, a shorthanded goal. So basically, in even 5-on-5 situations, it's sort of like a big, long running game when you're on the ice. So if your line scores a goal, you get a plus. If your line gets a goal scored against you, you get a minus. And so at this point, Patrick Kane is a minus 10. So it would be like the opposition is winning 10-0 on Patrick Kane so far in the playoffs. And that's Chicago's problem all around. Jonathan Taves, who's the captain of the team, basically like the Sidney Crosby of Chicago, he's a minus 1. It's really been the second, third, fourth line players of Chicago that have performed so far against the Wings, like Dustin Byfuglien, their big man who really produces in front of the net. Their stars, basically Chicago's problem is that their Crosby, Malkin, Letang-type players, the young guys, are performing like the Penguins performed against the Senators 2 years ago. They are basically being overwhelmed by Detroit's experience and toughness at this point. The Havlat hit in Game 4 when Havlat got knocked out was pretty indicative of the way this series has gone so far. Basically, Chicago's just getting out-muscled, which I'm fairly surprised at. I thought Chicago's speed would give Detroit some problems and they'd be able to keep up with the scoring. But, Adam, great question. Basically, what it comes down to is Detroit's outlasted a very young team.
Detroit's a good team, and they're the defending Stanley Cup champions for a reason. They have a bunch of guys that always play hard, and they have a ton of guys that contribute. You can't say enough about how good everyone on that team is. Even Penguins cast-off Michael Samuelson, he performs every time I see him on the ice. They just have so many guys.
So many skill players who are also responsible in the defensive end. It's the thing about Detroit is every time I see them play on TV, I can't tell when their fourth line's on the ice and when their first line's on the ice. There's really no drop-off in the tempo and the intensity and the style of play.
I think that's why they give Babcock so much, head coach of the Red Wings, Mike Babcock, so much freedom. He changes up those lines all the time. He's always ready to mix and match because when your players are that good and the system is that ingrained in their heads, I just think it's tough to beat a team that can roll lines like that because no one's really tired. I think that's what really, really hurt Anaheim. They had one really, really good line, their top line with Getzlaff, Bobby Ryan, and Corey Perry. That's a great line, but when you're logging 27 minutes of ice time as a line, that's just not good for your whole team. When you can't, I think it also takes other players out of sync. It makes you kind of have to feel like you have to perform more every time you're on the ice.
Well, what you're saying is the same story with Carolina. They have one good line, and really, honestly, they have kind of two-thirds of one good line. Whitney and Staal, and then they're plugging in sort of a scrapper that can try to make things happen, like a guy like LaRose.
LaRose's been playing well, though.
He's been playing well, but if LaRose or Scott Walker is on your top line, which is the only line that's producing, you're not going to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins, no matter how well coached you are, no matter how hard you try. And I think that's what Carolina's seeing now. That's the problem with Chicago. If you have that top-heavy, top line, and they're not performing, it doesn't matter how hard your second, third, fourth line players play. They won't be able to put the puck in the net at a fast enough pace to keep up with the truly elite teams like Detroit and Pittsburgh.
I agree with your point completely, but I disagree with saying that Chicago only has a top-heavy line. I think it's the opposite. I think Chicago's actually very deep, and they're not really relying on their main skill guys. Tate's been playing great in front of the net, and I think he showed me a lot in terms of that, why he's the captain and why he's the player he is. But, I mean, when you have guys like Bufflin, Sharp, all producing,
really?
Burrish, guys like...
Really?
I think they have a lot of lines.
Taves has shown you that he's an elite captain, because here's what's bothering me. The national media talked about Taves like he's one of the best young captains in the game, right? Like Mike Richards. And they completely ignore Crosby as the best young captain.
I think Crosby's the best young captain. I'm just saying that... I mean, I think Taves is just as good a leader as Mike Richards, but... Taves plays in front of the net in front of some of the biggest guys.
He's a minus one.
Yeah, I don't think that has anything to do with his captaincy.
He's a minus one and Sidney Crosby's a plus 10. And I agree, Taves is a great player, but Sidney Crosby is elite. His playoff performance so far has been unbelievable.
I agree. I'm not arguing that Sidney Crosby is worse than Taves, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, I know, but...
I'm just saying, I think Taves is a good captain. I think he's played well in these playoffs.
Yeah, but I don't think he's ready yet to make that next step. It's kind of like Sid in 2007.
Yeah.
He's good,
but I think
he's
shown
playoff
me that he
ready.
Can be it. That's what I'm saying. He's shown me that he can be a captain at the NHL level, and I think the team rallies behind him. I think when they need a big goal, Taves has scored it time and time again in these playoffs. And that's what a captain does. You score when you need to score. I love the Bilesma analogy of the phone was ringing. Because when the phone's ringing, Taves answers it, and he can score goals. So, and yeah, I think Crosby's one of the best captains in the league. He scores all the time when we need it the most. When we need a great game from a player, Sidney Crosby always steps up. Yes, Malkin's been playing great. And I think one thing that's worth mentioning is what made Malkin start playing so good in this series. Was it that fight with LaRose? He got in that little scuffle with LaRose, and then it was like they let the genie out of the bottle. It was just ridiculous.
Well, I'm willing. I brought up the point in the first podcast about can Evgeny Malkin be rattled? It seems like Sidney Crosby can't be rattled. He actually thrives on stuff like that. And I'm willing to admit that really, it's a moot point. It seems like Evgeny Malkin can't be rattled either at this point. He's a completely different player than he was last season in the playoffs, and. The physical game doesn't seem to bother him at all. In fact, he's been dishing out checks in this series quite a bit. But now that we went off on that diatribe, let me just circle back to your question, Ryan. Yeah, if I had to say it in one sentence on why Chicago's failed so much against the Wings, probably too much too soon for Chicago. They have some fantastic young stars they've overachieved so far in a sort of a wacky Western Conference playoff race. But... their top players, their top point producers, when they're on the ice, the problem is they're getting scored on more than they're scoring. Defense has been the problem. Taves is minus one. Havlat's is a zero. Chris Veerstig, who's a Rookie of the Year candidate, is a minus five. And Kane has really been the problem. He's a minus 10. So really, too much too soon for Chicago. They weren't ready to play Detroit. Thankfully, I think the Pens are this year. All right, P, I think we have time for one more question. Let's go to Dan the Man in Oakland. Hey, guys, this might be a weird time to ask this question, but what do you guys think Ray Shiro is going to do in the offseason? Can the Pens re-sign Guerin, or are we going to lock up our defensive core by re-signing Skadarian Letang?
Okay, yeah, wow, that's not something I really want to think about right now, but not to say that I haven't. Letang's going to be a restricted free agent, so we're going to be able to keep him regardless. I would love, absolutely love, to re-sign Bill Guerin to a 1 or 2 year deal. I think he adds a lot, as I said before, both on and off the ice. If we could probably get him around maybe $4 million. Last year he made $4.5 million. Maybe we could even get him for less, kind of a winner's discount. Along with him, I'd really like to re-sign Fedotenko. I think he proved his worth in the playoffs and under Biles when he played great. We're going to lose Boucher, Gill, Scuderi. I'd love to re-sign.
I think Scuderi would be the key re-signing. The problem is, since the Penguins have played so well so far, and especially since Rob Scuderi has played so well on such a grand stage, there are quite a few teams this offseason who are struggling, who have big budgets, like Edmonton and Los Angeles, who are in dire need of a very good defensive defenseman and a great penalty killer like Skadarian is. So I think there might be a lot of teams out there, P, who are going to be willing to pay Rob Skadarian quite a lot of money, probably Brooks Orpik money. And I'm not sure that the Penguins have that much money on hand to pay Skadarian, and he might be a very unfortunate departure in the offseason.
I think he may take a little bit less money to stay here. I know he loves it here and his family's here, and I think he really likes the town. And then to talk about the offseason is hard only because if we win the cup, it's going to dramatically change what people do. I mean, if we lose again, it's gonna be heartbreaking. I don't really know what to say.
It's going to be very interesting to see what potential free agents would do if we won or lost the cup. I mean, on one hand, I think you have a lot of guys like Brooks Orpik who came back after last year because he really believed in this team and believed that we could be a contender. But what happens if we lose to Detroit again? Does somebody like Rob Scuderi say, hey, I'd love to take the winner's discount, but right now, you know, Detroit has a dynasty, and I'm not sure we could beat them. Hey, I'm going to take $2 million more in Los Angeles or Edmonton and look out for my family. I mean, I think these are things that sort of would come into a player's mind.
Yeah.
And so I think it's going to be really interesting if we what happens in the Stanley Cup Finals. And again, in this podcast, we keep saying in the Stanley Cup Finals, and maybe it seems like we're thinking ahead too much, but really, the body language of Carolina after game three, I think they're cooked, and I'd be very surprised if the Penguins just didn't sweep them in Carolina.
3-0 deficit's almost impossible to come back from, and I don't think a team like Carolina has any of the horses.
Yeah.
I mean, who's going to score? When Eric Seidenberg.
Seidenberg, LaRose, Walker. These guys are decent puzzle pieces to a championship team. The problem is Carolina needs about 2 or 3 more Eric Staals to be a Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah, it's not good to look ahead, but with this series 3-0 and the Detroit series 3-1 in Detroit's favor, I think it's an inevitable.
But, Pete, just like the playoffs are completely different from the regular season in intensity, we saw last season the Stanley Cup Finals, it's a whole nother level compared to a regular playoff series. And the Pens are incredibly hot right now. But you know what? As much as people would like to see Chicago steal another couple games from Detroit, I want Detroit right now. I want them when Lindstrom, Datsyuk, and some of their other star players are banged up. I want them now while the Pens are hot. Bring it on right now because, honestly, if there's a long layoff...
That's the problem. Yeah. We're not going to play hockey till June 5th, no matter what. So there's going to be a long layoff in between this. So I once again, Gary Bettman, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Why is there such a long layoff in between these games? It's just nonsense to me.
But Pete, what about the media buildup? It'll be just like Super Bowl week with all the coverage on ESPN and all the other major media.
Yeah,
outlets,
I can't
right?
wait to see a 3-second clip of Barry Melrose talking about Detroit. I understand that arenas have other events going on, but you just can't have a league where you have to wait. How does the NBA do it? That's my argument. People say, oh, well, there's other things going on in these arenas. How does the NBA manage to always have a good schedule where there's a flow to it and you can say, ooh, I'm watching the playoffs. I'm in the mood to watch a game. I know there's going to be a game every other night.
Well, Pete, here's the problem. Okay, Memorial Day weekend, Stanley Cup, conference finals. You have Memorial Day Sunday. People are around their house. They're grilling out, watching TV. You have the NBA playoffs on. But the Stanley Cup Finals, you have one game. Why didn't they do a back-to-back? Why not all-day hockey on Memorial Day for all the hockey fans out there?
Why not even have a game today?
Exactly,
the game
sure.
on Memorial Day.
Everybody's off. I've been flipping the channels all day between the History Channel and Animal Planet. There's nothing on.
Yeah,
I've been watching Pet Detectives for the last 3 hours.
So it's just these long layoffs. It's just really... I love hockey. It's my favorite sport. I live it. I breathe it. I love the NHL, but they got to stop doing this to me, you know?
Not only do you live and you breathe it, but it actually affects your physical appearance. You actually have hockey hair if you like hockey so much. You have a mop of hair on your head.
I kind
of
look like Havlat.
And a playoff beard. Yeah, it's great. In the decor in your room, even. You have a Kevin Stevens poster.
Yeah, and come on, Gary.
This man loves hockey. Gary, you need to reward him. I don't understand.
Honestly.
I don't understand why we're sitting around on Memorial Day without any hockey on. We have to wait until tomorrow. It's insane.
Too many layoffs, and then this wait between the conference finals and the cup finals is honestly ridiculous. I understand you want to get 2 Sunday games on NBC. Well, you know what? Like, I think something that would improve your ratings much more. Why don't you actually get on a network that is in more than 60% of people's homes? I'm talking about Versus.
Sure.
I mean, Pete, you
look at ESPN's coverage right now. They're
it's
not
lacrosse.
Gonna...
I was watching lacrosse today. They can't even play hockey.
Put yourself in the program director of ESPN's shoes, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is where I don't understand Gary Bettman's thinking. The NHL playoffs so far have been unbelievable. Maybe the most exciting in the last couple years. You had the Ovechkin and Crosby series, fantastic. Even that Carolina-Boston series was extremely dramatic, right? Imagine you're the programming director of ESPN.
Yeah.
What are you going to promote? Are you going to promote the NHL, which is not on your airwaves at all? Or are you going to promote the NBA... and Major League Baseball, which you actually show every night, you depend on the ratings.
Yeah.
So if you're Bettman, I understand, we have a channel Versus that is completely dedicated to the NHL. The problem is, it's hardly in any hotel rooms throughout the country, so if you're traveling, you can't see it. It's not in 100% of the homes in America either. And I just don't understand how he didn't anticipate the fact that ESPN, the largest sports network in America... is not going to give your league any attention if they don't show any games.
It's common sense. I even look at people I know. They have to buy Versus, and they don't even want to pay the extra for Versus HD. You have to buy 2 in a completely different package. What? I just don't understand. I mean, you want to talk about hockey being a niche sport? I think Bettman's jamming it into a niche. I think hockey is ready to explode. I think people are ready to embrace a game where, and Bill Simmons talked about this, where the refs don't control the game like the NBA, where players mm-hmm. police themselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All these games, I mean, the only things that have been entertaining are kind of these finals. The West and East finals have been kind of lopsided, but I just think it's going to lead to a great Stanley Cup playoff, but a couple of the games are going to end up being on Versus, which absolutely
is ridiculous. The fact that you're the finals of what is supposed to be one of the major 4 sports is going to be on a network that's not, you know, in...
60% of cable, only 60% of people that have cable have Versus. That's insane. I honestly just don't even know what to say about that. People just don't have this channel. And are you going to be willing to pay an extra however much a month just to watch the playoffs? I mean, I am, but is Joe Average ready to do that? No. And I think it's hurting the league. But... To get back to the question, yeah, the Pens
what
offseason.
What a tangent.
Yeah,
wow. What a tangent that was. Wow.
Talk about the Pens offseason. Things get a little testy, you know? You don't want to think about the Pens season being over.
I think it's time to wrap things up. I'd really like to thank the readers for the questions. Pete, what do you think? What's the takeaway from this series? What have we learned going into the Detroit series, and what have we learned about the Pens franchise going into the future? I think for me, it's the two-headed monster. It's what we said in the first podcast. Carolina was on a roll, but look, okay, you want to stop Crosby? How are you going to stop Malkin? Oh, okay, you're going to stop Malkin now. Well, how are you going to stop Crosby? Yeah. How are you going to stop guys, even on the third and fourth lines? Who are you putting up against them? The only team at this point in the NHL that has an answer for us is the team that we will likely be facing in the Stanley Cup Finals, the Detroit Red Wings. And I think it's going to be a clash.
It's going to be epic. My takeaway, I can sum it up in one word, and that's toughness. I think up and down the roster, we showed that we're a tough team, much tougher than last year. And we're going to go toe-to-toe with Detroit. I mean, we're going to take some punches, but we're going to punch back. And I think we have a lot of guys that protect each other, protect other players on the ice, finish their checks, back check, forecheck, play the corners, play in front of the net. I just think we have all those things that define a champion, and we're going to see, because we're going to probably play the defending Stanley Cup champion. And I honestly wouldn't have it any other way. You know, it just feels right. It feels right playing Marian Hossa and the Detroit Red Wings. It just feels like this is the defining moment of Crosby and Malkin's careers right now.
Hey, P, speaking of Hossa, let's leave the listeners on a tantalizing note. Once again, let's think about the possibility of Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins overcoming the Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Finals. And that long, long handshake line going down at center ice, whether it's in Pittsburgh or in Detroit, in Marian Hossa, ambling through the line slowly with heartbreak in his eyes after he defected from Pittsburgh to go to Detroit. What if he lost the Stanley Cup Finals to his former team, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the team that he thought didn't have as good of a chance at lifting the cup as the Detroit Red Wings? And he has to look Sidney Crosby in the eye and say, "Nice series. Congratulations." Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to The Berg Show. We'll be back next Monday. Good night.
Take it easy.
And go Pens.